Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, your Bendrovsky Show for Tuesday, February 25th. It's just moments away. But before we get into that, we got to thank the following unions for sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9 are sponsors, as well as the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. Hey, unions, thanks. Couldn't do it without you. And of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you in part by our dear friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Ben Jarofsky, let's hear our song of the day, please.
Well, D, I thought I'd go a little contemporary. Mm-hmm. Okay, you always say I never do anything previous to 1979. I thought I'd get a little contemporary. Do a song from 1987. Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. I have no idea why I was thinking of that song, but I was thinking of it. And anyway, that's a shout out to all our 80s fans out there, okay? Vicky, shout out to you.
That's my mom. She loves that song. The Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Tuesday, February 25th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, our Chicago Reader colleague, Maya Duke-Masiba, returns. It's the long-awaited return of our good friend Mark Sims, and another return, our good friends Lori Glenn and Juanita Irizarry. And now your host, yeah, making his return, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Checkmate Tuesday, and here's why. Great weekend. You have a good weekend, D?
Yep, I did.
Yeah, I had a great weekend. Guess what I saw? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah.
Oh, that makes it what?
Four. This really is a cry for help, ladies and gentlemen. I saw it was on sale. I bought it. I brought it home, and my wife had to go to do some work, so she left the house. I'm like, I'll just watch a little bit. Next thing you know, I watched the whole thing. I love that movie. Yes, I need help. Anyway, woke up, and what did I discover? A text from our dear friend, Mick Fansler. No one knows what you're saying. You go, wait, Mick Fansler, the rocker? Yes. Mick Fansler, the guitar player? Yes. Mick Fansler, the songwriter? Yes. Mick Fansler, one of the leaders of the group The Curls? Yes, that Mick Fansler. He's also a dedicated lefty and was a guest in this show not too long ago, talking politics, playing his guitar, singing songs. Anyway, as I said, he is a Democrat of the Bernie Sanders persuasion. Is he a Bernie or bust Democrat? Kinda, in that category. Anyway, as such, he's always eager to participate in a game I call Nancy Pelosi Chess, okay? And Nancy Pelosi Chess goes this way. I defend Nancy Pelosi, and my friends of the leftist persuasion rip Nancy Pelosi and tell me how wrong I am. And it's like, they give me evidence, like moving a chess piece here, thinking they've cornered me, and then I counter with evidence, moving a chess piece there, and so on and so forth, as pieces get moved around the chessboard. See who can be victorious. It's a game I love to play. My lefty friends love to play it, too. Anyway, get a text from Mick I think it was Saturday morning. I was sound asleep. Mick was up bright and early.
What did that sound like when he texted you?
Beep, beep, ding, ding, beep, beep, ding. I'm like, man, I've been up all night watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, all right? You know, these rock and roll stars. You ever notice how like today's generation of rock stars get up early, D? Anyway, Mick Fansler sent me this text. Very interesting article. By the way, he was not the only one. Babs sent me the same. He put it on my Facebook page. Everybody's sending me this thing.
I'm just glad you're on that Facebook page and reading the posts that people send.
No, I so it was a, you know, I... This hurt, man. It was an article that appeared, I think, in a newspaper in Dallas. It was talking about a Democratic primary between Jessica Cisneros, a 26-year-old lawyer who's sort of cut from the AOC mold, and she's up against Henry Cuellar, who is a longtime incumbent who's definitely of the right wing of the Democratic Party. Think of it as Texas' own version of sort of the third congressional district race here in Chicago and Cook County, where Danny Lipinski is defending his seat against Marie Newman. And Lipinski, of course, is a Democrat in name only. And Newman is running at him from the left. She ran at him, of course, 2 years ago. It's a rematch. So it's sort of the same things going on in Texas, where Cisneros is a Bernie Sanders, AOC Democrat. She's the person, if I lived there, I would just, without hesitation, without doubt, vote for her. Happily vote for her. I'm sure Dennis would vote for her. McFansler would vote for her. Babs would vote. I think pretty much almost everybody who listens to this show on a regular basis would vote for her, all right? That said, Nancy Pelosi, D, are you ready for this? Is supporting Cuellar. So, as are the Koch brothers. Well, there's only one Koch brother left. As the Koch brothers. So this guy Cuellar is what? He is pro-gun. He is pro-trade deals. He is what else? He's votes with Trump many, many times. He's really on the far right end of the Democratic Party. He's so far on the right end of the Democratic Party that he's in danger of falling off. And yet Nancy Pelosi endorses him. So Mick Fansler sent me the article and he said, sorry to say it, Ben, Nancy Pelosi sucks. And so if you think of the chess game, he this is what I wake to see. This is what first thing I see after being up all hours of the night watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for the fourth time. Did I say that? Anyway, so he's really happy. I've moved my rook. I don't even know chess that well. And now your queen is cornered. You're about to lose, Ben. And what did I counter with thee? I'll tell you what I countered with. By chance, I happened to hear AOC herself on The View. I think it was a couple days ago. You got that clip ready to play, young man?
I think there's a lot of incentive to blow up disagreements in the party as like huge fights, because I think it's important for us all to recognize, and we do this in our rallies, to recognize the people who have been in this fight to allow us to have this window as we do right now. You know, Nancy Pelosi, that's Mama Bear of the Democratic Party. You know what I'm
That's Mama Bear, the Democratic Party. You hear that, McFansler? You hear that, Bab? Uh-oh, D, that's me maneuvering my chess pieces around. They're cornered. I know they're going to counter, but here's the reality. The reality is this. Nancy Pelosi is not the leader of the Benny J faction of the Democratic Party. She's not the leader of the McFansler faction of the Democratic Party. She's not the leader of the Babs faction of the Democratic Party. She's far to the right of where I would like her to be. But the reality is this. She's holding together a very diverse coalition of Democrats representing all different kinds of constituencies, all different kinds of districts in the age of Trump. I think she's doing a hell of a job on that front. I cannot thank her enough for holding the Democrats together during this difficult time. And apparently, AOC agrees with me. How about that? AOC agrees with me. Now, AOC, by the way, is down in Texas campaigning for Jessica Cisneros. And I'll tell you this. If Cisneros defeats Cuellar, guess what? Mama Bear will welcome her into the fold. We got a great show today, everybody. Oh, yes, indeed. Maya Dukmasova will be in here in about 20 minutes. Got a lot to talk about with her. A lot of local issues with Maya. We'll also talk about the debate. Debates tonight. Oh, my goodness. This is Bloomberg's great stand, D. Mike Bloomberg's got to prove to the world that he's not as incompetent as he appeared last week. Can he do it? We'll be talking about that with Maya. Mark Sims will be here. We'll talk about that as well with Mark Sims. He also says some interesting things about the gig economy. Our old friend Mark Sims got a lot of interesting things to say about the gig economy. And then Lori Glenn and Juanita Irizarry will close down the show. More debate talk, more Bloomberg talk, more Bernie talk. Plenty of political talk ahead of us. Before we do that, the young man from Alton, the man they call Dr. D. One of our listeners said, I don't like the Dr. Doobie thing. I want Dr. D. So the man we call Dr. D,
with the news.
Still waiting for someone to say, hey, call him Dennis. Nobody. Because that's my name.
Nobody ever says that.
It's only a debate. Dr. D, Dr. Doobie. Some say Doobie, some say D.
How's it going? Let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker.
And for the record, I love puppies.
Today, our governor is in Peoria, Illinois. Mm-hmm. He's at the OSF St. Francis Medical Center to discuss how broadband expansion will impact telehealth and health outcomes for residents in rural areas.
That's good to hear.
You know, when looking up Peoria, Illinois, I learned something interesting and odd. Ben Jarofsky, did you know that in Peoria, Illinois, that it is against the law to have a basketball hoop installed in your driveway?
I did not know that.
It's true.
I don't believe that.
The senior urban planner for the city of Peoria claims that it is part of a zoning ordinance that regulates how residents can use their front yards. The ordinance says the 25 yards in front of a home cannot include any accessory structure, nothing other than your driveway. Mm. Says the planner. A freestanding basketball hoop is an accessory. It's sort of okay if the hoop is fastened to an attached garage because the garage is considered part of the house. It's a fine line.
Mm. Fascinating story. You know, I used to do a lot of zoning stories back in the day. If I was a reporter in Peoria, I'd be all over that one. I like zoning stories. I did a ton of them.
Oh,
the
here's
90s.
Another article from Basketball Hoop Guy.
Okay. I did a couple stories, by the way. You should say this just briefly. You know, we do those dives. We go back in the portal, the time portal, look at old columns I wrote. I did several stories. In the 90s, Mayor Daley and the Park District were taking down basketball hoops throughout the city. The notion was that somehow or other basketball hoops were attracting a bad crowd to parks, etc. So if you got rid of the basketball hoops, you get rid of the bad crowd.
Well, that's a roundabout way for saying something, isn't it?
Yeah. Welcome to Chicago in the Daley years. Not much different than the Rahm years. Anyway, so I did many stories on that.
The urban planner says the city of 115,000 is not anti-basketball. Mm. It's just that the ordinance says the hoops have to be in the backyard.
Okay.
If homeowners don't comply, they can be fined up to $500 per day.
Wow.
They're in violation of the ordinance, right?
$500 a day?
Yeah.
They don't play in Peoria.
You learn something new every day, everybody.
Oh, man. Wow.
All right, moving on. No public events scheduled for our Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, which is perfect because over the weekend, our former Chicago mayor appeared on national television again.
Thank you, Chicago, for this humbling victory. All I can say, you sure know how to make a guy feel at home.
Yeah, it's Rahm Emanuel, the lead antagonist in Ben Jarofsky reader columns for damn near a decade.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, pretty much from about 2011 to 2019.
After Bernie Sanders' big win in Nevada, our former mind-numbingly moderate mayor played political pundit for the weekend when he stopped by ABC's Gathering of Frightened Boomers, also known as ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Is that the name? I called it the George Stephanopoulos Show.
ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
It's like Kenny Davis Show. I always called it the Kenny Davis Show. Oh, well.
And just like every other time, Rahm's best friend Chris Christie was there. Also present, Frightened Boomer Republican strategist Sarah Fagan was there as well. And if you're a supporter of our leading Democratic presidential candidate, one Bernie Sanders, well, you'd better listen up, because this week on This Week, a former Chicago mayor is about to tell us all how stupid we are.
Take a chill pill, man.
Stephanopoulos takes it to Rahm from the beginning. Remember, everybody, he's smart and you are not.
Wait, hold on one more time.
Let me take it to you from the beginning. Is Bernie Sanders unstoppable?
He's the front runner. He's not. He is stoppable. I don't know, but I would say this. The moderates have to coalesce around one person. If you have a divided field, we've seen this play out in the Republican primary in 2016. If there is not kind of a singular mano to mano, then he's going to get the delegate.
No indication that anybody's going to drop.
No, I mean, this is what's clear right now is that everybody has still a thread of a logic of why they should stay in either resource or delegate. And as long as that happens, he will continue to have 45% and makes a majority. I do think people should take note. His entire strategy upends every electoral map that either President Clinton, President Obama, or the midterms of 2006 and 2018 put together. It's a different theory of the case. never been tested before nationally and never have been proven successful for any Democrat, either presidential or congressional majorities.
And if at Bernie Sanders, he did not increase the turnout in Iowa.
I like Stephanopoulos, you know, pretending as though he's really neutral in this and just thinking about what Rahm says, even though he and Rahm are cut from the same freaking cloth. They worked together back in 1992 in the Clinton campaign. By the way, there's a documentary about that. I urge everybody. What's it called? Backroom or something? I can't remember. Anyway, Rahm Emanuel. Well, you know, I think that that advice falls in the category of duh. I actually agree with Rahm on this. We've been saying this in the show for a long time. Moderates. I urge all moderates out there, look to me, if you want a moderate or what plays as a moderate in the Democratic Party, which is an interesting concept in this day and age, to me, it seems obvious that you should all rally around Michael Bloomberg. Now, Michael Bloomberg, you say, I can hear, is not really a Democrat. True. He's not much of a moderate. That's true. He's more like a Republican. Well, again, he's like a Mitt Romney Republican, which is exactly what Rahm Emanuel is. So that constitutes more or less the moderate wing of the Democratic Party. And the reason I say Joe Biden supporters should switch to Bloomberg, or Pete Buttigieg supporters like Dennis should switch.
Wait, what?
Just make sure you're listening. He doesn't really support Buttigieg. Should switch to Bloomberg because Bloomberg has a ton of money. And so if you're going to run a moderate who not only does not inspire the base of the Democratic to come out to vote, but actually turns off many members in the base of the Democratic Party. So you'd probably see a declining turnout of Democratic voters. If that's the person that you think should lead the Democrats against Trump, then you should go with the richest person in that group, because Bloomberg, has the money to try to offset the loss of support he's going to face, because he will face a loss of support guaranteed. Democrats of, let's say, the Mick Fansler persuasion, or the Babs persuasion, or even the Dr. D persuasion, Maya too, I'll bet, will have a very difficult time voting for a Democratic candidate named Michael Bloomberg. Just, it's a reality. I know lefties. I'm around them all the time. I talk to them all the time. Okay, Rahm? You may want to browbeat them into voting for a Bloomberg. You may want to make fun of them for not voting for a Bloomberg. We may want to call them losers, because that's what's kind of embedded in what you're saying. But the reality is they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it the same numbers they'll come out for Bernie. So that's why I say to centrists, I think Rahm's right. Centrists have to unite around one candidate, and the logical candidate to unite around is the one who's least representative of the Democratic Party, and that's Michael Bloomberg, who is basically a moderate Republican. But I got to agree, Rahm's absolutely correct on that one.
All right, Rahm's right. We'll see if that theme continues throughout as we play these clips here. As Ben mentioned, yes, they did invite one Bernie Sanders supporter to the panel to defend the man, politician Yvette Simpson. But Ben, the centrist force was just too strong.
He does have the momentum. He is the front runner. I believe he will go into the convention with the most delegates. I think the biggest challenge is the establishment continuing to fight at him instead of saying, look, he's our front runner.
Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. 15 times he's been on the ballot in Vermont, and not one time did he say, put his name forward on the Democratic nomination. I don't understand why Democrats feel compelled to hand-wring around their convention rules around a person who is not a member of their party.
He's a Democratic socialist. We have to continue to say that. So he is not one who believes
that. No, we don't have to continue to say that.
You should say that, because it's the truth, right? Yeah. He's not. Democratic socialism is different. Martin Luther King was a Democratic socialist. Nelson Mandela was a Democratic socialist. He believes in democracy, but believes that the economy should be looked at from a different perspective.
Yeah, nice try, Bernie lover.
All right. This is funny. The other woman, what's her name? Sarah, a Republican, mm-hmm. very concerned about the purity of the Democratic Party. Let me just point out, Sarah, the person that you Republicans love these days, Donnie Trump, was not a Republican throughout most of the 90s. He was back and forth. Sometimes he supported Democrats, sometimes he supported. In fact, here's where is Rahm? Mr. Rahm is full of wisdom, D, when it comes to attacking the vulnerabilities of Bernie Sanders. How come he didn't stand up to defend Donnie Trump there? Donald Trump gave $50,000 to Rahm's reelection campaign back in 2010, or his election campaign, contributed $50,000. I'm sure it had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Donald Trump was building a huge tower on the banks of the Chicago River. D, don't even suggest that. That's too cynical, okay? I'm sure it was just he really respected Rahm, loved Rahm. By the way, Donald Trump hired Ed Burke and his property tax lawyer, who was one of the leaders of the Democratic Party. D, I'm sure it had now stop being so cynical. It had nothing to do with the fact that he wanted to put that big sign up there in violation of all ethics and taste. By the way, you notice how Rahm looked the other way when he put the sign up? Oh, then when the sign's up, I'm shocked, I'm outraged. But I don't think he returned the $50,000 that Trump gave him. So it's interesting. Donald Trump is not exactly a pure Republican, and yet Republicans, they pledge allegiance to him. Sarah's got to go, oh, Master Trump, oh, Master Trump. They're afraid to say anything negative about him. And Chris Christie, that we haven't talked about Chris Christie. He's sitting up there. Do you have any Chris Christie tapes you're going to play?
Yeah, we've got a few clips.
Yeah. Chris Christie is so afraid of alienating Trump. He ran against Trump in 2016. In fact, I remember some of the Republicans saying, you know, when it was Cruz, Rubio, pointing out that Donald Trump was not always a Republican. So it's interesting. Democrats are not supposed to vote for Bernie because he adds socialist to the Democratic name, but it's okay for Republicans to vote for Donnie Trump, even though he is was a Democrat in many cases. And by the way, Mike Bloomberg is not exactly the epitome of a Democrat. Michael Bloomberg supported George Bush. Michael Bloomberg ran as a Republican in New York. Michael Bloomberg couldn't even bring himself to support Barack Obama in 2008. So it's interesting how standards, when it comes to Bernie Sanders, are upheld. He is not a real Democrat. But it's okay. Oh, Bloomberg. you know, that's why we have racers on pencils. People change their minds.
Hey, remember that time Mayor Rahm rode his bike around Lake Michigan?
I just biked around Lake Michigan.
How many miles was it?
Nearly 1,000 miles.
Oh, and what you talk about? Healthcare. Oh, God, Mayor Rahm, you're a piece of work. You're a real piece of work.
Here's one point, and there's a classic why somebody's better figure this out.
Okay.
You're in Nevada.
Okay.
The site of one of the worst mass shootings in American history. Just 2 years ago. It's not that far in the rearview mirror. Bernie Sanders' records on guns is horrendous. From assault weapons to litigation against gun manufacturers. Not one person on that stage had the gumption or the wherewithal to say...
Well, Biden mentioned in kind of a throwaway line.
Yeah, literally a throwaway line with that many people dead? When you're talking about Democrats in a primary and his record on guns, it's more representative of Vermont than it is where the country is and where the Democrats are. And that tells you these candidates haven't not taken him seriously. And they woke up this morning.
And he has
record on guns.
He has the support of many leaders for March for Our Lives. They understand his record was more about representing rural communities in Vermont than about gun violence that happens in places like Chicago or happens in L.A. It's very different.
Here's the thing I will tell you. As a person assigned by President Clinton,
smart guy talking. Take notes.
Bernie Sanders was always on the side of the gun manufacturers. And what my bigger point is political, not policy, which is you're on a stage in Vegas with one of the worst mass shootings, and nobody brought it up dealing with him seriously.
Oh, God. Where do I start with this one? Where do I start with this one? I mean, talk about talking out of two sides of your mouth. All right. First of all, let's concede this point. On the issue of guns, Rahm is correct. Bernie's vulnerable. Bernie does not have a traditional Democratic take on guns. In fact, Bernie was against one of the most significant pieces of legislation that really could have helped in deal with these mass shootings. And that was legislation that was proposed. I forget when it was proposed. That would hold gun manufacturers liable for the carnage caused by the weaponry. There's no way Bernie could talk his way around that. Okay, that's a stand he took back in the day that was detrimental, in my humble opinion. This is me talking. This is not Dennis talking. It's not McFanzler talking. It's me talking. That is detrimental to the Democratic, detrimental to society. So Rahm's absolutely correct. But who is Rahm Emanuel to talk about the inconsistencies of Bernie Sanders? Rahm Emanuel represents the centrist wing of the Democratic Party, whose chief spokesman, Barack Obama, is going around telling Democrats not to be woke, not to hold people to purity tests, to let people slide, to recognize, as Nancy Pelosi does, we just got finished talking about this, that some Democrats who are running in purplish districts
have to take stands that may be at odds with what other Democrats who are in blue districts do. This was Rahm's vision of how to run candidates in 2006. And he would yell. He would get mad at people like me. He would get mad at the McFanzlers of the world who had this view of what's right and what's wrong. And he would say, you guys are just lost in the old days. You don't know how to win. I'm practical. I know how the game is played. And he would put up right of center Democrats to run in sort of like Trump districts, people who were against gun control, people who are weak on abortion rights, people who are weak on environmental issues. And he would say to all lefties like me, shut up and take it. You got to run a centrist to win in a centrist district. That's how you play the game. So here's Bernie Sanders playing the game by the rules that Rahm expects everybody to follow. He's got a lot of rural voters in Vermont, so he's weak on gun control. And Rahm's like condemning him for it. So, hey, wait, is it only you're only supposed to be woke when it works to your advantage, but then other than that, you go back to sleep? Man, that is really hypocritical. That's, you know what? I got to give Rahm credit. He's talked. This is Rahm. Here's one side of the mouth, and here's the other side of the mouth.
Well, to quote Mayor Rahm, shut up, Jurovsky. We got more clips.
As Rahm pointed out, you know, he's been on the wrong side of the Democratic Party on guns for a long time. He's about to have a spotlight shown on him, and we'll see how he stands up.
Who is the messenger? The gun question asked. Now, imagine this. Forget about the other candidates.
We've done 7 hours on Medicare for All in the last 9 debates, and not one.
On the panel, no one asked the question on guns. If that were a Republican debate with that same panel of journalists, you could guarantee that guns would be an early-on question. So that's one problem. Who's going to do the vetting? The press doesn't seem to want to do the vetting on this. Secondly, which of those candidates is going to show the aptitude, George, to really vet Bernie Sanders? You got to give him credit. Sanders has stood up there in the middle of that stage. When Donald Trump was in the middle of the stage, people were hitting him.
Yeah,
not that much.
No. Listen.
But just pause for a moment. Chris, ABC, look, you guys are going to do what you want to do. What in the world makes you think like Chris Christie and Rahm Emanuel know what's going on, all right? Chris Christie was essentially thrown out of the state of New Jersey. He's a joke. He bombed when he ran for president in 2016. Then he started cuddling up to Trump, and Trump basically said, get out of here. I mean, nothing exposes the utter hypocrisy of Chris Christie and the Republican Party. Trump threw him out of the White House because Chris Christie, back in the day, was a prosecutor, was working on a case having to do with Jared Kushner's dad. So Jared Kushner basically told Donnie, get rid of him. Donnie said, okay, bye. See you, Chris Christie. And he lands on ABC, where he's suddenly giving advice to Democrats. What Republican would listen to Chris Christie, number one? He got kicked out of the party. Two, what Democrat in his right mind would listen to Chris Christie? And then you got Rahm Emanuel. The reason Rahm's on that panel is because he didn't run for re-election here in Chicago. And the reason he didn't run for re-election in Chicago is that even the Chicago voters, you know, I love you, Chicago voters. I really do. But you're not the brightest voters in the world. Even the Chicago voters had enough of Rahm. His polls showed him that, and that's why he left, because he didn't want to lose. And now you got Lori Lightfoot, who's our mayor, who I think is infinitely better than Rahm, going around trashing Rahm, you know, more or less all the time. So, like, why would anyone take advice from Rahm? And by the way, this thing about no Democrat being hard on guns, if you recall, Rahm, back in the Obama days, he didn't want to hear about guns. He told Eric Holder, I don't want to hear another word about guns. Only he threw a few F-bombs in there being Rahm. Why? Because he thought it's a loser issue. Why? Because he thought they would lose swing districts. Rahm is the king of not taking a tough stand because he's afraid about losing a swing district. That's the Rahm, Axelrod, Obama view of the Democratic Party. And so for him to say, you should have criticized him on guns. I mean, yes, if you have a legitimate policy issue with Bernie Sanders, you should point out. Absolutely. You should point that out. But it's almost painful to listen to Rahm going on and on about guns when he had an opportunity to take a strong stand during the Obama years. He was urging the Democrats to back off because he was afraid of losing swing voters.
But he rode his bike all along Lake Michigan.
I just biked around Lake Michigan.
Well, there is that. What did you talk about?
I don't have that
question. Oh, that's good.
The question is, who's going to take these questions surrounding socialism to Bernie Sanders at the debate?
Well, I think right now, everybody, there's a two-part problem.
Okay.
One, everybody's about to do that.
Oh.
And the problem is you need one person. And we don't, and as this happened, we saw it in 2016. I want to get back to this one point. The coalition that President Clinton and President Obama put together, a coalition for congressional majorities in both 2006 and 2018. Is totally different from anything Bernie Sanders is talking about.
That's
he doesn't
true.
Care about that metropolitan majority welcoming independent swing voters from the suburbs into the Democratic Party. This has been tried. We just saw it in Great Britain. Jeremy Corbyn went down dramatically. And this is upending. Now, it may prove something that has not been proven, and politics and economics and culture and social issues have upended that and scrambled the egg, so to say. But I think this is a strategy, and here's a test. Not one of the congressional Democrats who flipped a red to blue district in 2018 have come out and endorsed him.
That is going to have to be one of the questions that Bernie Sanders is going to have to answer if he continues to get momentum. What does it mean for Democratic Senate candidates? What does it mean for Democratic House candidates? You already hear some critics warning that if Bernie Sanders is at the top of the ticket, that the Democrats could lose the House.
Critics. Rahm just said it. Some critics. Rahm's a critic. This is like Main Street. And they got one poor Bernie person up there. And she's trying to look as moderate as she can. This is the one. They got Rahm. They got three Republicans, really, because Rahm, let's face it, is a Romney Republican. You got three Republicans. Stephanopoulos, who's, you know, like sort of like a Hillary Clinton slash Romney Democrat. And then you got the poor Simpson Bernie Sanders supporter who's really trying to sound as moderate as you can. Totally outnumbered. And everybody gets a chance to talk, right? So there's four moderate voices or four Republican voices. That's our mainstream media, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for the content, ABC.
We saw an amazing historic election in 2018, brought on in part by hatred for Trump, but also by the fact that now the new American majority is representing us and they want to run for office. For offices like the House and the Senate. And I think Bernie building a multiracial coalition, multi-generational coalition is what we need for the future of our party. People were thinking about previous races. Trump showed us that people were voting a little bit differently. Even Barack Obama's race, people were coming out who don't traditionally come out. We can engage those people. And I think I told Rahm this, I will tell the entire Democratic establishment, whoever the nominee is, if it's Bernie Sanders, people need to get their folks to show up.
Well, we're not there yet. First of all, here's the one thing. But here I'll say is, Take Illinois, which is now solidly blue, but just 10 years ago it wasn't.
That threw you out of Chicago. Yeah, that Illinois.
Congressional members of Congress.
Yes.
In the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Schaumburg, Naperville, out in McHenry County. Ask them if that's the choice. They want to have a Democratic Socialist at the top of the ticket. And you said Congress and Senate, governor, state houses where redistricting is done. That's all up this year. That is at risk.
Okay, so much to unpack again. I just want to point this out, McHenry County. These are areas, what Rahm's alluding to, these suburban areas, in reality, many of them, Bernie outdid Hillary Clinton in 2016. These are basically, a lot of these are red areas, and in those red districts, Bernie's far more popular than whatever moderate is running. That's just a fact. Now, what Rahm and Stephanopoulos are saying is true. A lot of the Congress people that got elected in 2018 are very wary and concerned about Bernie Sanders. They're actually very wary and concerned about offending anybody. I just heard Lauren Underwood talking about this the other day. She's not going to support anybody. It's problematic. And this is something every candidate that is running for office right now that comes into the studio and I ask them, who are you supporting for president? They always say they're neutral. Why? Because if you're running for a recorder of deeds, if you're running for Cook County Board of Review, you want Bernie Sanders supporters to support you. You want Michael Bloomberg supporters to support you. You don't want to alienate anyone. So nobody's going to go around and say, yeah, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, and then get all the Buttigieg supporters upset at them. So they're playing it very neutrally. Yeah, this is new. This is what Bernie Sanders is attempting to do is new. Hasn't been attempted in the Republican Party. I just want to say to Rahm, your strategy didn't really work so well. Yeah, you won in 2006 with the congressional elections. Within 4 years, almost every person you elected was booted in that midterm election. And the Democrats haven't recovered since. So the old Clinton strategy that works so well really doesn't work so well, which is why right now Donald John Trump is our president. The Republicans have the Senate and they hold the Supreme Court. And you're saying, no, let's keep trying the same strategy. I do not know if Bernie Sanders can get elected. I do not know if Bernie Sanders is going to mean that mainstream Democratic Congress people in suburban districts lose. I just know this. The Rahm strategy, the Clinton strategy, it didn't work.
And we know this. Boy, he is one hell of a biker.
I just biked around Lake Michigan.
Wait, how many miles did he go?
Nearly 1,000 miles.
And he talked about health care with everyone he saw. Guess what, D? None of them wanted Medicare for All. Did not find one person who wanted Medicare for All. Most people saw Rahm come in the restaurant and ran out the back door. Oh, no, there's that weirdo from Illinois.
All right, we're going to park it right there. We got more clips from that frightened boomer party that happened on Sunday at ABC's
scared.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Hey, Stephanopoulos, let some other lefty in there. Poor Yvette Simpson, she's surrounded by right-wingers.
We're going to play more of that a little later on. Maya Dukmasova is with us, and we're going to be talking backroom deals and so much more. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture. Food. Arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
Hey, welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Maya's in the studio. Maya, that Dr. D was hilarious. Bleak boomer party on the George Stephanopoulos show, and it's so true. And, I've got mixed feelings about my beloved boomers.
People of the boomer persuasion.
They're so scared. I'm scared. And Rob's like trying to foster that fear, perpetuate that. Be scared. You're going to lose the House. We already don't have the Senate. Your strategy's terrible. It's the worst strategy. No, we don't want to encourage more people to vote. It never works. In fact, when Rahm was mayor, when Rahm was mayor, did everything he could to discourage people from voting. You know what I'm saying? To feed like the sense of hopelessness and alienation, and you can't possibly win. So don't even bother. You can't beat me. I'm going to close your schools. I'm going to kick you out of Chicago.
Bleak boomer party. Yeah.
You know what? They should put Maya on that show. Hey, Stephanopoulos.
I resent that. I'm not a boomer.
No, but they should. That's the whole point.
There are so many much more qualified and interesting people that could go on that show.
I disagree. All right. All right, let's switch gears. Get off of Rahm for the moment. Although you must have had some. Did you hear any of that? Any of the stuff that Dee played just now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But just that. I didn't actually watch this thing on Sunday.
Oh, God. So. Dennis sent it to me. All week long, lefties were sending me stuff, and I watched all of it.
Well, this segues great into what I would like to talk about, that 2 weeks ago, the week of Valentine's Day, I was on vacation that week, and Valentine's Day was Friday, I guess, yeah. Suddenly, I'm getting these emails and tweets sent to me about how Lori Lightfoot, in her City Club speech that happened on February 14th, came out in support of Just Cause Eviction. So, this was very interesting. I mean, but I was on vacation, so I didn't look into it further. But I thought to myself, great, I'll put a pin in this. I'll be back next week. I have an eviction-related story that I'm planning on writing anyway, and this will be a great thing to slide in there as well. So I started looking into this last week, listened to the speech, and do you know what Just Cause Eviction is?
Why don't you explain to people?
So Just Cause Eviction is kind of a term of art that it's a type of legislation that protects people from being evicted for no reason. So if a municipality or a state has a just cause eviction law, usually what it says is
unless somebody is not paying their rent or, you know, is chronically late on their rent or is violating the lease or doing, you know, something else to sort of mess up the property, that you can't just evict them. You can't, and this exists in laws like this exist in California. There's a version of this in Seattle. I think maybe in Oregon as well. In Portland, there may be one. So it's a intense form of tenant protection laws that tend to, if they get passed, they get passed in places that are rapidly gentrifying, in order to prevent situations like we see in Chicago all the time, which is, for example, take a place like Logan Square. Somebody buys a building. It has tenants in it whom, you know, maybe they've lived there for 10, 20, 30 years. But the neighborhood is gentrifying. Property values are going up. There's lots of demand for housing in these neighborhoods. The developer or the landlord will tell people, you know what? I want you guys out of here. They give a 30-day notice. That's all you're required to do in Illinois. You can evict someone for no reason at all, giving them a 30-day notice. And so in 30 days, people have to move. It doesn't matter how long they've lived there. And then usually, you know, the developer or the landlord will rehab the units and rent them back out at a much higher price. And this is happening all the time in like places like Pilsen and Little Village. It's like it's a really big problem, especially in gentrifying neighborhoods, but also in lower income neighborhoods as well. We saw a lot of this in the wake of the foreclosure crisis, et cetera. So far, there is no just cause eviction laws in Illinois. They don't exist in Chicago either. So on February 14th, when the mayor mentioned in a speech at the City Club that she's proposing a just cause eviction ordinance, that she's pushing for a just cause eviction ordinance, this was obviously very exciting to hear. And this is big news. This would be a really huge change to the eviction laws locally. Mm-hmm. So then I get back from vacation and I start looking into it. I listen to the speech, and in the speech, what she says is that she gives an example of what this ordinance she's going to push is actually going to do. So she says, you know, we're supporting just cause eviction, and it's unfair that people who may have lived somewhere and paid their rent steadily and been in compliance with the lease, you know, suddenly have to move and only have 30 days to do it. So people should have longer to move out of their place if our landlord is kicking them out without cause. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that makes sense. And then she went on to talk about other measures she's proposing that have nothing to do with this. So all she said was that we're going to propose just cause eviction, but how she explained what that would mean was that it would just mean people would have more time to move. Mm-hmm. It actually didn't address the causes at all. What she said did not in any way reflect how just cause eviction, what that means in places that it actually exists, which is that you cannot evict someone. I mean, there's probably exceptions and caveats to this, but generally it's like it's not about how long you give people to move out when there's no cause to evict them. It's about that you can't just evict people without cause. Mm-hmm. So, but what she mentioned in the City Club speech was just about that you would give people more time to move out. You can still evict them without cause, but they would have more time to leave.
So I just want to make sure that I'm absolutely understanding you. Mm-hmm. In other words, the law that she proposed, as she outlined it in this speech, would not protect a working class or lower income tenant.
Or anyone.
Well, but this is mainly who this is dealing with. Mm-hmm. In a gentrifying neighborhood, from being just routinely evicted because the landlord wants to flip his building.
Maybe the landlord wants to move a family member into the building. Or maybe, you know, there could be, it's not, you know, I don't want to paint it all with this brush that like, it's just like avaricious landlords who are trying to squeeze maximum profit out of their buildings, which, you know, obviously this is very often the case, but there could be all kinds of other reasons why someone wants to move the tenants out. But it would not prevent that from happening. But what she said was just that it would give people more time to leave if somebody was getting kicked out without cause. All right. So then I thought to myself, well, I should really clarify this with the mayor's office, because she said the words just cause evictions, which means something very specific in this realm of eviction laws, landlord-tenant laws, et cetera. So I thought maybe she just gave this example in her speech, but maybe the proposal she's going to make and the ordinance she's going to push with city council will actually have just cause provisions. Like maybe it'll actually create some kind of limits in terms of like the reasons why a landlord can remove tenants who've been compliant and paying their rent on time and stuff. So I emailed the press office, the mayor's press office, and asked them to clarify. Like, did she mean what did she mean by saying just cause eviction? Did she actually mean it in the sense that of like the way these laws exist elsewhere, or did she only mean that it would be something related to people having more time to move if they're getting evicted without cause? And what I got in response was basically a statement that talked about how hard it is for renters in Chicago. And then the only specific they gave me in terms of to clarify what she meant was once again the example of people getting more time to move. And they didn't even say like, oh, we're going to do 60 days instead of 30 mm-hmm. or 90 days instead of 30. So basically... they didn't provide any clarification. All they're saying from it on its face, what it seems like the mayor is supporting is changing the local law or introducing a new local law to give people who are getting evicted without cause more time to move, not to actually limit landlords' abilities mm-hmm. to evict people without cause. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just find this, so it, my article in The Reader this week is going to deal with this as well as talk about trends in the 2019 eviction data that I just got from the clerk of the circuit court recently. But I just find it interesting that she would use this phrase, just cause eviction, because it feels, so this phrase for people in the real estate industry and in the kind of real estate lobby, whatever, Chicagoland Apartment Association, the realtors, this is like a dog whistle, essentially. Like, this is going to send all those people into like a wild frenzy, freaking out that their ability to evict is going to be infringed upon, right? Yeah. But on the other hand, mm-hmm. I imagine that if one of those people calls the mayor's office and says, what is this I'm hearing about just cause eviction? The mayor's office can then say, oh, no, like we're not changing anything about the causes that you can evict for. We're just saying we need to, you know, give people more time. And look, even if that's even this issue of more time, like the real estate lobby will put up a fight against it for sure. Mm-hmm. Like they don't want people to have 31 days instead of 30. They don't want people to have 60 days, obviously. Like they're going to see this as an affront to their property rights. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard either way. And I'm not at all trying to suggest that it's like a bad idea to give people more time to move. Like I, you know, reporting on this issue all the time, like 30 days is not enough to move. And especially not if you've lived somewhere for decades. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely like amazing to see the mayor care about this issue and propose this idea. But I'm baffled by the fact that she decided to use the phrase when she didn't actually appear to mean that there would be, that she's pushing for a law to change the reasons why you can evict someone. Because mm-hmm. it just seems like you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. You want to say this thing that's like a progressive buzzword, mm-hmm. but that's also quite politically costly because it's going to have fallout on the other side of the political spectrum with the real estate people. But like, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to wrap my head around this, but it's just, but like words means things, you mm-hmm. know? I don't know. I find it, strange and irritating
yeah.
that she now gets to say, so she's going around saying she's supporting just cause eviction, but like actually the fine print is that doesn't seem to be anything like that. It's a good thing, but it's a different thing. It's yeah. not just cause eviction.
There's a lot to unpack with what you just said. Interesting. Listen, if you view the world the way Lori Lightfoot, as mayor of the city of Chicago, does, you have competing interests at all the time. So you have the renters movement, which is looking for protection against gentrification. And then you have the real estate community that is looking to maximize its profits at all and protect their interests, okay? Mm-hmm. She's in the middle as she sees it. She did not really win as being a, you know this better than anybody, as being a champion of the anti-gentrification crowd, the tenants crowd, and she did not win by championing the interest of real estate. She was right down the middle. She ran as a reformer, and now it looks as though, from what you're saying, Maya, it's classic. She's playing it down the middle. And so eventually the debate could come down with people, tenants' rights people, being mad at her because she is not really proposing a just cause eviction bill. And the real estate lobby being upset at her because they don't want to see any caps on the number of days, or they don't want to expand the amount of time that that the tenants have in a building before they're evicted. And so she could say, well, I got both sides mad at me. I must be doing something, or I could read the editorials right now.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, I think that like there is nothing she could say on this issue and no kind of tenant protection she could propose that wouldn't create backlash from the real estate people. Like there's just no kind of progressive push she could make. It's an unwinnable situation with them. They're going to be against any steps to give tenants more protection, whether it's time, whether it's the reason why you're evicting them. Like their stance is going to be in opposition to that no matter what. Yeah. So she can't win with them. Mm-hmm. But why do you have to say that something is, like, why do you have to make it seem like more than what it is? Like, why do you have to use this phrase to describe what you're proposing, which is a good proposal, which is like a good kind of conscientious and progressive idea? But why do you have to slap this label on it that means something different? Like, just to like make it sound more progressive than it actually is.
That's exactly why she's doing it. Now, one of the things...
And yep. I mean, she got a lot of positive press about it. And I guess like nobody bothered to actually look into what just cause eviction means. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But like that, I was shocked. I was shocked when people were sending me those emails and tweets about it, because I was like, what? Now, Lori Lightfoot, who's like not for any kind of rent regulation, is supporting just cause eviction now? Well, sure enough, like that's not what she's saying.
Yeah. Well, my friends of the... centrist persuasion are always telling me, Ben, it's how you message something. They always tell me this. It's how you message something. So when they criticize Bernie, for instance, on Medicare for All, they go, it's all about the messaging. And so if you're telling people you're going to take away the private insurance, they're not going to be for you. They're going to be against you. So you have to message it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it looks like this is a messaging thing.
Yeah.
So you just take the words of the tenants movement, apply it to your bill, even if it doesn't apply, and you say, voila, I'm championing the tenants. Now, one of the things I noticed about you is that you had communication to Lori Lightfoot's housing circle. I know this because we had one of our first Tuesday shows you brought on housing. I was really impressed. Wow, Mick and I never had that back in the day. How are you having conversations, just private conversations with people in the Lightfoot administration who are explaining to you what she's up to?
Ben, I'm not going to tell you about my private communications with people.
vaguely, you know.
No, I mean, look, I went through the most like straight and narrow, you know, regular channels mm-hmm. to try to clarify this. I just reached out to her press office. I got, you know, it took like a whatever, within 48 hours, it got back to me. I did. So it was last Thursday that I reached out to them. And that was the day of the poverty summit that she was hosting. Mm-hmm. And so the spokesperson said to me, like, I tried to get something from them by the end of the day, and she said it wasn't going to be, it was going to be probably not possible because she said the housing team is at the poverty summit. So she must have had to like go to the housing department, whatever team that's tasked with messaging around this or hammering out the details of what she's going to propose to like bring my question to them. So I don't know. Like, I don't even know if Lori Lightfoot herself knows what she's saying when she's saying just cause eviction.
That's
like another. Yeah. It's quite possible that no one has explained to her like that what she's saying means a very specific thing.
Yes.
That like this is a term of art that means that this is like, yeah. To a person like me listening, this is a huge deal that she's saying that she's for just cause eviction. And then it's like, well, wait a second. This isn't actually, she's not describing that at all. She's describing something different. So, I would, but besides the housing department people that I may have private communications with, I'm also actually interested in the progressives and city council's kind of views on this because, you know, any kind of legislation like this that she's going to propose is going to obviously rely on them, on the progressives in the council to really push for it. And as we know that the progressives in city council are significantly to the left of Lori Lightfoot on a lot of issues. So, I mean, perhaps there's going to be some negotiation and movement on in the direction of actually just cause eviction through the kind of lawmaking process.
Well, this is a distinction between, I'm going to give Lori Lightfoot a little shout out here and try to draw a distinction between what she's doing and what previous administrations do, even if the reality is that there's not much difference. I've said this many times. We said this at First Tuesday when we had the discussion about housing. The policy of the mayors of your entire lifetime has been to encourage gentrification, to use whatever powers the city has to spur development of neighborhoods. And when you develop neighborhoods this way, when you bring in upscale developments into neighborhoods, you make them less affordable, you move people out. That's a reality. That's what's been happening in the city of Chicago on a systematic, steady basis for 40 years. And it was the policy of Daley and it was the policy of Rahm. And they never thought of this as a problem. They never thought of gentrification as a problem. They never thought of tenant. You write, you spend a lot of your journalistic efforts writing about tenants who are moved out of property, moved out, forced out of the housing they've been in for a long time, and how little protection there is. This is like your equivalent of your TIF crusade. And the reality is that the leaders in the city of Chicago, Maya, don't view this as a problem.
I mean, no doubt it is like a tremendous step forward that the mayor of Chicago is even acknowledging that
point.
Evictions are a problem in the city.
Yes.
Like 100% like hat off to Lori for even talking about this, because this is a huge issue that nobody was even talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And but I just, you know. But words means things.
Words mean something. You're absolutely correct. And this is an ongoing debate. We had Jeanette Taylor in the studio a couple of weeks ago, alderwoman of the 20th Ward, who will be at our show on March 3rd. We'll get into that a little while later. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about this issue in a different form in terms of protecting residents in the Woodlawn area that are going to be displaced by the Obama Center, all of the gentrification that will spur, and the difference of opinion she has with the Lori Lightfoot and the Obama Center people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lori Lightfoot gets the hits, but it was Barack Obama's Obama Center that is taking a strong stand against some of the proposals that Jeanette Taylor has. And today's Tribune has a story about how Lori Lightfoot's proposal, she's put a proposal out here, it doesn't completely satisfy Jeanette Taylor. And so this is going to be an ongoing debate. And again, Lori Lightfoot puts herself in the middle of this. She's not on the quote-unquote tenants. She's not Bernie Sanders. She's very much in the middle. And if she could have a situation, Maya, like I said before, where tenant groups are mad at her and real estate lobbies mad at her, then she could say, must be a good settlement. Everyone's mad at me.
I mean, I think that ultimately, like, this is, if even this issue of, like, giving people who are getting evicted for no cause more time to move, like, tenant advocates are going to be behind her. Mm-hmm. And, like, the legal aid community is going to be behind her on this. This would be a huge win, even if it was just that. I would, my feeling is that, like, why strap a bomb onto this, like, pretty well-intentioned legislative proposal by like slapping it with the label of just cause eviction when it's not even that, when this is going to be like a huge lightning rod for opposition from the real estate industry. You know, Like, if you're not even going to be proposing a just cause eviction law, like, why even slap that? It's like slapping some dynamite on it when it's already going to be hard enough to even pass this measure to give people more time to move.
Yeah.
Like, what? It just seems like strategically, like, it's just going to attract more negative attention. And the tenant rights folks are going to be with, I don't think there's a lot of tenant advocates and tenant rights groups that are going to be like, no, like, this is not just cause eviction. We don't want more time for people to move. Like, people are going to be supportive of whatever little incremental progress there can be on this issue. But I just think that calling it just cause eviction when that's not what it is, it's just probably going to generate more opposition and more, you know, lobbying against it.
Yeah.
Just for the fact that this word is getting thrown around.
Yeah. So, by the way, I had to, just listening to you talk about displacement and gentrification and the changes that have occurred in Chicago, I've not even articulated this thought. It occurred to me, I was watching the NBA All-Star game. I don't know if you saw that or you're out of town, but it was in Chicago this year. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, there were all these Chicago artists paying tribute to the interconnection between Chicago culture and the NBA All-Star basketball. And almost all of the people they were championing were black people. I think it was all black people. It was all about black Chicago. And I just think about, listening to you talk, I'm thinking about the changes that are happening in Chicago. What is it, 80,000, 100,000 black people moved out of the city in the last 10 years? Neighborhoods have bottomed out. There was the same time the NBA All-Star game was going on. The New York Times finally got around the right. They wrote a story, a front page story about black people moving from Chicago. And again, I'll just say this. I believe there was just a general overall strategy to encourage this kind of development, that the people who ran Chicago view it as a positive. And so the tenants' rights groups are, you know what I mean? They're like desperately trying to hold on to something that the city leader has been trying to take from them all these years, move out of Chicago. Even as we pay homage to all the great champions of black culture from Chicago. Do you know what I'm saying, Maya? Mm-hmm. Move out of Chicago.
Yeah.
And this is like a tail end of something that you're writing about. We'll see how successful the tenant rights people are. Anything else you want to say before I switch subjects with you for a moment?
No, I think that's probably all there is to say about that. I'll get back to you if I find out any more concrete details about what she actually means when she says just cause eviction.
And in the meantime, she's not going to share her private conversations.
No, no, I'm not.
It's off the record means off the record. Yeah. Okay, all right. Anyway, let's talk about, we have a big show coming up on Tuesday. Talk about that.
That's
please.
Right. We are March 3rd. We're having a special version of First Tuesdays, kind of a roadshow edition. It's part of the Readers Mobilize series, which we've had two of these events already. I was missing for one of them 2 weeks ago, but we're having a pre-Super Tuesday event at the Promontory in Hyde Park. It's going to be free, so I really encourage everyone who would normally go pay $5 to see us at the Hideout to, you know, use that money for CTA fare to make it down to Hyde Park. And we will have Jeanette Taylor, Delmarie Cobb, and Kofi Adamola with us to talk about the primary, to talk about everything having to do with the Obama Center and issues down in Hyde Park and Woodlawn with gentrification and displacement, talking about progressive candidates, talking about how well the left wing of the Democratic Party is doing with the black community, everything that you can think of. We'll have obviously lots of discussion with the audience as well. And Tuesday at 6, I think the doors open at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. You can find the information on the Chicago Reader website, on social media. And we're really excited about
it. And that'll be a Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
And so
this coming Tuesday, in a week
from today. And also all the conflicts that we've been talking so much about on this show, even at the start of the show when we were dissecting Rahm's analysis, will be at play. You know, the efforts, the fear that centrists have about what Bernie represents, mainly Bernie, but also to a certain degree, Elizabeth. Isn't it funny they don't talk Elizabeth? They feel like they got Elizabeth Warren under control. But if you recall, Maya, many of the same things that are being said about Bernie were being said about Elizabeth Warren about 2 months ago when she was on top of the polls.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll see how it plays out. That will be Mike Bloomberg's first appearance on the ballot in any states. He wasn't on the ballot in Iowa, New Hampshire.
Super Tuesday will be.
Tuesday will be. So it'll be really interesting to see how he does, you know, how those the round-the-clock airing of commercials is playing out. Will that replace, you know, just like the hard work of knocking on doors, the grassroots end of it all? I'd be really curious to see and how he can overcome all the stupid statements he's made in the past about women, the bad policies made in the past about black people. You know what I mean? Can he overcome that and win the support of Democrats? Be interesting to see. And that'll be March 3rd. So we'll be following that in real time as it unfolds.
6 p.m. at the Promontory. We'll have our event with our guests, and then it'll kind of transition into a watch party, basically, of the results as they roll in.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
March 3rd, mark your calendars. Also, you guys have been hustling too, doing some backroom deals, talking about the primaries, right?
Season 3 of Backroom Deal is back.
That's
We're
correct.
Back.
Yeah.
Robert Mueller's listening.
Big fan.
I know
fan.
He is. He loves big it. Fan.
Yeah, big fan.
And the one that dropped, looks like you guys are informing everybody of the delegates, right? I sat there and listened to you guys talk about it. Boy, I'm still kind of confused.
Yeah, you know, I listened to it twice today, and I think I sort of get it.
No, it's a confusing thing. How the Democrats go about choosing delegates or apportioning delegates to candidates is, we should just bring Maggie Wonderly wherever we go. She knows every rule.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what I do now? Shouldn't talk about my sources, but Maggie comes on the show and I say it anyway. Whenever I see an article in which like a mainstream person writes about the delegate process, I send it to Maggie. Maggie, did they get it right? my own personal delegate selection fact checker, Maggie.
I hope Maggie's there on Tuesday at the Promontory.
Yeah.
We could use her in the crowd.
It's a 10-episode series, The Backroom Deal. We've produced 5 of them, and they're going to be coming out throughout the weeks here. So
The second one is about the state's attorney's race. And then we've got the rest, the ones coming out this week are going to be also about the clerk of the circuit court. Mm-hmm. Metropolitan Water Reclamation District and the Board of Review.
And I should say Jacob Meister will be on the show in about a week.
He's running for clerk of the Circuit Court.
Yeah. We had Richard Boykin on the show. So, you know, we're getting all the different candidates one by one coming on the show.
Yeah. And people can download the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, listen to it on the Reader website. So, subscribe, rate, review. We love doing this for you, so show us some love on there so we can keep doing it.
Very good. All right, Maya, thank you very much. Mark Sims will be our next guest. We're going to bring him on, I hope.
He's here.
He is here.
Yep.
We'll bring him on when we return. Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com. One more time. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com. Hey, everybody, what you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffmanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you people. J-E-F-F
M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
Hey, downloaders, remember, we live stream this program Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites. Join us at the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. And when you join that YouTube channel, you can join the live stream chat. Oh, my God, we're having a good time making fun of our former mayor. Wondering what's going on with our current one. Typical day on the Ben Jarofsky Show. Join us. Listen live.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.